Tyreek Hill, there's a hell of a good argument to be made, is the best wide receiver in football in 2018. I'm not good at math, but I can even do these numbers. Through 11 games, he has 11 touchdowns. That means he's on pace for 16. Through 11 games, he has 1,106 yards. That means he's on pace for 1,600 yards. By any measurement, numbers, eye test, however you choose to quantify these type of things, 1,600 yards receiving and 16 touchdowns makes you, if not elite or on the short list with the best wide receivers in the game, the best. Number one. Nobody's better. So I think so far this season, the Chiefs have had the best quarterback, the best wide receiver. I don't even think there's much of an argument when it comes to tight end play. As a matter of fact, how many teams even have a threat at the tight end position? A few years ago, you had Jason Witten and Tony Gonzalez and Jimmy Graham and Rob Gronkowski. What the hell happened to that position? It went from being a glorified offensive lineman our entire life to 20 years ago, Tony Gonzalez comes around, and all of a sudden it becomes basically a wide receiver. And then it's gone away. The Chiefs are one of, what, two or three teams, Gronk, Ertz, that uses that position as an extra wide receiver. Oh, by the way, they happen to have the best. If you want to count Travis Kelce as a wide receiver and we start just listing Antonio Brown, Julio Jones, A.J. Green, Adam Thielen, and we count tight ends, Travis Kelce is going to come up sooner rather than later. Maybe top 10, top 12. Based on their results, the Chiefs have had the best quarterback in 2018, the best wide receiver in 2018, the best tight end. And save Todd Gurley, you could argue Kareem Hunt has been the best running back. 824 rushing yards, 4.6 yards per carry, 7 touchdowns rushing. Wait for it. Another 7 touchdowns receiving. Look, Todd Gurley can really run the football. All-time great. On his way to the Hall of Fame, probably. But he doesn't catch the ball to the backfield the same way that Kareem Hunt does. In his first two seasons, or season and a half, Kareem Hunt has 11 receiving touchdowns. So my point is this. On the offensive side of the ball, as good as the Saints are, and the Chargers, and the Texans, and the Steelers, and the Patriots, they don't have the best quarterback, the best wide receiver, the best tight end. You could probably argue the best running back, which gets me to my point. Damn, this defense is bad. I mean, bad, 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 bad. In the history of the game, has there ever been a team that you could even argue has the best four position players on one side of the ball? Quarterback, running back, wide receiver, tight end. I say that and I'm thinking maybe Emmett, Irvin, Aikman, and who was it? It was Moose. So there have been some really good combinations. But I think that just goes to show us how bad this defense is. You could have an offense that's this talented, with this many weapons, with an offensive genius of a head coach in Andy Reid, put up 40 points and lose to New England. Put up 50 points and lose to the Rams. Scary thought. Scary thought, because unfortunately, in the AFC, these teams that the Chiefs are going to have to face can all put points on the board. And the only way that teams have been able to beat the Chiefs this year, home field advantage, shootout, win by 3. That's it. That's it. It's not like teams have been able to solve the riddle. It's not like teams have gone, yeah, but if you just do this, or if you can control the ball, or they can be... No! No! The only way to beat the Chiefs, and frankly, I look at the schedule the rest of the way, you get the Raiders twice, you only face one team with a winning record the rest of the way, and that's the Chargers. I wouldn't be surprised if the Chiefs rattle off their last 5 games and finish 14-2. In fact, part of me expects it. But come the postseason, you better have home field advantage. Because if you have to go on the road to a team with a really good offense Exhibit A, the Chargers. Exhibit B, the Steelers. Exhibit C, the Texans. Exhibit D, the Patriots. That's how you beat the Chiefs. That's how we become an upset fan base again in the postseason. The Chiefs go on the road. They play a potent offense. And they barely get outscored. Because we're 11 games into this season. It has flown by. And the common denominator is you can't beat the Chiefs unless you've got one of the all-time, or I guess, one of the current great offenses and home field advantage. So just don't give your opponent home field advantage. Fortunately, the Chiefs control their destiny when it comes to that. If they win out, home field in the AFC goes through one Arrowhead drive. Coming up next, we step back inside the mind of the machine right here on 610 Sports Radio. I guess the best news on the defensive side of the ball for the Kansas City Chiefs has come out in the last couple of days. Andy Reid has announced that after the bye, the plan, not set in stone, not concrete, things could always change because they have over the last year and a half, but the plan is that Eric Berry will be rejoining the team and practicing after the bye. And if that happens, I'm not going to pretend like I think Eric Berry is going to come back at 100%, and he's going to look like when he came back from cancer and when he came back from an injury the first time, because you're talking about a guy who the year after cancer, he finished, I want to say it was fourth, in NFL Defensive Player of the Year voting. If anybody thinks that he's going to have that big of an impact on this team, you're crazy. Here's what I think he's going to do. Right now, the secondary is bad. All-time bad. Just awful. And the opponents know it. So even though at times Justin Houston's been really good, the defensive line, Chris Jones has shown out, D Ford has definitely had a career year, it's not all bad with the defense. It's all bad with the secondary. So when you add Eric Berry, you make it a little bit less bad. There are people out there that think, oh, well, all of a sudden you're going to go from the 30th best defense in the league to the 15th. No, you're probably going to go from the 30th best defense to the 25th best defense in the league. But even if he has that type of an impact on the secondary, as good as this offense is, that's all you need. That's all this team needs. This team is, you can't see what I'm doing with my fingers because it's radio, but I'm making a little pinch thing. Like it's tiny, tiny, tiny. The difference between this team winning the Super Bowl and just being really good. This team's 6 points away from the undefeated conversation taking place. This team could be 11-0, and the only losses they have were on the road by 3 points to two teams that you could argue have become the Super Bowl favorites in the Rams and the Patriots. We'll keep talking Chiefs the rest of the way, but right now, let's step back inside the mind of the machine.
All right, Sean Levine.
Julio Sanchez.
Yes, sir. How high should the Chiefs be in the NFL power rankings?
I just checked on ESPN.com. They've got the Chiefs at 3. New Orleans 1. The Rams 2. Chiefs 3. Followed by New England and Pittsburgh. Now that we're 11 games into this season, so let's call it, what's that, close to two-thirds of the way through? It's the usual suspects, man. It's everybody that we thought was going to be there. We thought heading into this season that the Rams were going to be really good, and they are. We thought New England was going to be really good. They are. We thought Pittsburgh was going to be really good. They are. New Orleans and the Chiefs were the two teams heading into this season that are a lot better than anybody thought that they were going to be. But nobody's shocked, right? Nobody's that shocked that the Chiefs are where they are. It was just, how good is Patrick Mahomes going to be? Well, he's been great. Best player in the league. Therefore, the team is great. Same thing with the Saints. The question was just, has Drew Brees gotten old right in front of our eyes? The answer is no. So they're still elite. But man, it's the haves and the have-nots. If that's your top five, at least some version of that, New Orleans, the Rams, the Chiefs, the Patriots, and the Steelers, here's my next five. Such a big drop-off. The Bears, Chargers, Texans, Carolina, and I've got Indy I've got the Colts at 500 as the 10th best team in football, which, if anything, shows you just how big of a drop-off as there are between the teams that actually have a shot and then that next tier of team. What's next?
I know we don't talk a ton of NBA here in Kansas City, so for those that haven't paid much attention, can we get a quick update, please?
James Harden's lead the league in scoring, followed by LeBron James. Kemba Walker, third in the league in scoring at 29 points per game. My guy, former Jayhawk, rock jock, Joel Embiid. I told you to put money on him to be the league MVP. He was 18-1 at the beginning of the year to win the league MVP. All Joel Embiid is doing is averaging 28 points, 14 rebounds, and 2 blocks a game. As far as the standings go, Toronto is pacing the way in the East. They're 15-4, followed by Milwaukee. The Bucks are 13-4. Cleveland with the worst record in the East at 2-14. And out West, if you're not paying attention, you probably had no idea this is taking place. Here's your top three teams in the West, right? It's not the Lakers. It's not the Spurs. It's not Golden State. It's not Houston. Wait for it. Here's your top three teams. Memphis, Julio, right now, name me every player you can in the Memphis Grizzlies. I'm going to start. Mark Gasol, your turn.
That's a good one.
That's the team with the best record, 12-5. I think they still have Mike Conley. Portland, 11-6.
Did he sign somewhere else? I thought he signed somewhere else.
Maybe he did. And the Clippers, 11-6. Those are your three best records in the West. Memphis, Portland, and the Clippers. What's next?
Duke lost to Gonzaga yesterday. Are you taking the Blue Devils or the field to win the title?
Oh, I'm taking the field. Duke's incredibly entertaining to watch, but there have been a lot of really entertaining teams that put up a lot of points that don't win a championship. And if Duke wins the title, obviously I'm not going to be surprised. But my Jayhawks, every bit as good. Not every bit as talented, but every bit as good. When you think about the combination that they have with their guard play, with their transfers, with the big guys down low, talking about KU. And Gonzaga, who was ranked number 3, beat Duke yesterday, as you mentioned. So you would think when the new poll comes out, Gonzaga is going to leapfrog Kansas like Duke did last week. What a weird scenario for KU. You start the season number 1. You fall to number 2. Then number 1 loses, and you still don't get moved up to number 1 because of the circumstances. I think when the new poll comes out, it'll be Gonzaga 1, Kansas 2. The question is, how far, he said, does Duke fall? Right now, Virginia is ranked number 4, Tennessee is number 5, Nevada is ranked number 6. When the new poll comes out, is Duke going to be ranked behind Nevada because they've got a loss? They shouldn't be, but they might be. What's next?
And I did confirm Mike Conley is still on the Memphis roster.
Thank you, sir.
Guess what other former Jayhawks on there?
Ben McLemore? No. Darrell Arthur?
Wayne Selden.
Wayne Selden? Are those other guys on there? They were.
They were at some point, but not anymore.
Darrell Arthur is no longer
a while
Grizzly.
There, he was. But
who
no.
knew? What's next?
The Browns and Bengals play this Sunday, which means former coach Hugh Jackson will face his old team and give them the inside scoop because they're going to need that to beat the Browns, right? Should the NFL do something about this?
Yes, they should. It's not cool that you're a head coach of a team that you get fired and then you can go on somebody else's staff and coach against that team. You know the ins and outs. You know the actual verbiage of the play calls. You obviously know the assistants and everything up and down. I'm not talking about like the whole life is fair thing. Sometimes like this is actually unfair. You shouldn't be allowed to have a coach on a coaching staff that later on in the season is coaching against that team. The NFL needs to do something about it, especially in this situation where the Browns fired their coach, but since it's a division opponent, they have to play the Bengals twice. The way the schedule worked out, Bengals and Browns faced 2 of the last 5 games, kind of like the Chiefs and the Raiders. This is a big black eye on the NFL. Like they have to, not that this is going to happen
think so
a lot.
At all.
Really?
It's
like having inside information.
These are the repercussions you face when you decide to keep a head coach that clearly should not have been kept. And then you let him go mid-season. That was the Browns' poor choice.
I guess from a
coming to bite them.
And from a Bengals perspective,
why wouldn't you?
I would say, why would you? Are you sure that this guy's really going to help you? Like, yeah, as the coach of the Browns, they couldn't beat anybody, but is he going to help you be able to beat them? I'm not sure. Maybe he just sucks at his job.
This is the difference between the Bengals making the playoffs or not. Worth it.
My name is Cleveland Brown. What's next?
Beatty is obviously out in Lawrence.
You think?
All right. Will K-State and Mizzou need a new football coach next season, too?
No, I think Barry Odom's good. I think there's a bit of a buyout there that's probably going to be a little bit too much, where he's going to get one more opportunity at least. I don't know about K-State, man. I'm, like, throwing my hands up right now. I really don't know. No, K-State University is Bill Snyder University, and I mean that in a literal sense. If you've ever been to a K-State football game, right outside of Manhattan, you take Bill Snyder Highway, and then eventually you end up at Bill Snyder Family Stadium. I think that it's the most impressive coaching job in the history of college sports, where you took a team in K-State with the worst Division I winning percentage and you turned them into a national powerhouse for, what, 15, 20, 25 years? The problem is that was a decade ago or 5 years ago or 3 years ago with Colin Klein. That ship has sailed. It's become Groundhog Day in Manhattan. What's the best case scenario? You're talking about a now 79-year-old head coach that just signed a 5-year contract. So he's supposed to be 83 at the end of that deal. K-State's smart. They're proactive and not reactive. They buy out whatever Snyder's deal is. They say thank you. They build a statue for him. But what's the best case scenario if he plays out the term of the contract? K-State wins 7 games, 8 games the next couple of years? It's not good. Last one.
In a season full of highlights, which Pat Mahomes play will you remember the most?
You're going to make me do this, man.
I'm going to make you do it.
I'm going to say the left-handed throw on Monday Night Football, division opponent. If you don't make the throw, you don't get a first down, you don't win the game. We kind of have a different perspective of Patrick Mahomes because that kind of kept the legend alive.
But was that the pass or was that the catch that was more spectacular? For me, for that play, it was the catch.
There's just so many of them, man. They're just, this guy outdoes himself every, whether you want to talk about an individual game where he throws for 6 touchdowns, 7 touchdowns, 8 touchdowns, 300 yards, 400 yards. You want to talk about his scrambling ability. You want to talk about getting a first down left-handed. Hell, we can go back to the preseason. He threw the ball 80 yards in the air in the preseason, but none of these might be the answer to the question. It might be that play where he scrambled out. Remember, I think it was like the second game of the season, and he found Chris Conley in the corner of the end zone. I think that's the play where everybody collectively in Kansas City went, oh, like, he's not just a big arm who can air the ball out. He can keep the play alive. And unlike Alex Smith, who looked like Huckleberry but ran more like Eric Berry, like, he could actually get outside the pocket pretty well in the case of Alex Smith. Usually he ended up sliding or scrambling for a first down. Patrick Mahomes keeps that same play alive and then heaves the ball down the field for a 75-yard touchdown.
What about this angle? It's to be determined because it will be coming in the playoffs.
Oh.
When the Chiefs win the Super Bowl.
I like it. I like it a lot, you cheeseball. That's Julio Sanchez. I'm the Sports Machine, Sean Levine. Coming up next. What do you think, Julio? Take a trip around the NFL. We could talk some college sports. Go back to college.
Go back to college.
All right, we're going back to college. Coming up next right here on 610 Sports Radio. Welcome back, 610 Sports Radio, Julio Sanchez, Sports Machine, Sean Levine, taking you up until 3 o'clock right here on 610 Sports Radio. Man, was I out of place yesterday. Julio, you ever been to a Trader Joe's store?
I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's.
Yeah, see, I am not a big fan of Trader. It's not that I dislike Trader Joe's, it's that Trader Joe's just like me. It just, I don't fit in. I feel like a few years ago, I went to Las Vegas, and it was a guy's trip, but one of the guys brought his girl. Like, he couldn't, for whatever reason, he wasn't able, she convinced him that she was able to go along on the trip. I'm like, dude, it's a guy's trip. No, she's coming. So we're in the sports book or whatever. My buddy's a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan. Game goes to overtime, Pittsburgh and Jacksonville. And you would think, being his girlfriend that she would know him very well, and he's wearing a Steelers jersey, a old Troy Polamalu jersey, if it matters, that she would know, like, the minimal about this guy, her boyfriend, or about the game that he likes. And she talked herself into coming to Las Vegas. So we're all sitting in the sports book, right? Guy's obviously a Steelers fan. We're in the sports book. Means he's going to lose money if his team loses. Game's in overtime. Obviously, everything's on the line. Jacksonville has a pick six. Roethlisberger throws a pick six. Jacksonville runs it in. Game over, right? The girl stands up and yells, "Yeah!" And I'm like, "What? How could you be, how could one human being be so out of place? How could you not know your boyfriend, not know the scenario, not know you're in the sports book, not see his jersey, not know that a pick six when the green team, not the black team, is running the ball the other way is not good for you? How can you not know that? You're just so out of place. That Julio is me at Trader Joe's. Like, I don't belong."
But with that story, you're asking how could she be that oblivious when she was that oblivious enough to talk her way into going on a guy's trip to Vegas?
Yeah, they broke up.
Yeah, I didn't see that one coming. Shocker.
It lasted. Shocker. I may or may not have had something to do with it. We got home and I'm like, "Bro, two things. One, you brought her on a guy's trip. And two, that whole thing in the sports book after the interception, like, to me, that's reason for breaking up. And if you were married, that's reason for divorce." Okay, I took that one a little bit too far, didn't I?
Right.
Speaking of the holidays and the family, happy Thanksgiving to everybody out there. Julio and I taking you up until 3 o'clock. We're going to go back to college here in just a couple of minutes because here's the thing, Julio. I've never had a nice car. I've always drove crappy cars, right? But sometimes if the car doesn't start up or get you where you need to go, you know what you got to do? You got to get a car with less miles. That's what the Jayhawks went out and did. Oh, you didn't like it? I'm going to tell you why Les Miles is a perfect fit for the Jayhawks coming up next, right here on 610 Sports Radio. So I'll admit, I'm a very gullible person. A few years ago, I'm dating this girl, 4th of July. I lived in an apartment complex that had a pool. And she said, "We should make a giant glow stick out of a 2-liter bottle and put it in the pool and it'll light up the whole pool." So I thought, that sounds pretty cool. So she gave me the instructions on how to do that. And I didn't double check. And so the directions said that you were supposed to go out there and buy a 2-liter bottle, get a couple of chlorine tablets and some rubbing alcohol, put it together and close the lid. And everybody knows what happened except for me. So I do this because I'm an idiot. And luckily, we go outside, and I can feel the pressure building in the 2-liter bottle. And I told her, I'm like, "Hey, you might want to move, like, a few feet away, because this thing sounds like..." And then I toss it. Luckily, I tossed it, and it exploded. I'm an idiot. Apparently, I made a bomb and not a glow stick, and the thing blew up. And luckily, we were outside, and there was chlorine everywhere, because, again, I'm not that bright. And I listened to what somebody else told me that I shouldn't have believed. Which brings me to this question, Julio. I told you earlier before the show started that I moved and that I've got a situation going on with my bathroom, with my toilet, that I'm not sure if the water's running. All I know is that my toilet ain't a flushing. And you told me to get a gallon of water and to just pour in the toilet, and all of a sudden, my toilet is magically going to flush. I ask you, Julio, right now, to all of Kansas City, are you lying to me? Am I going to make some sort of a bomb again trying to make a glow stick? Or does that actually work?
If it was the glow stick thing, I'd be all for it. That would be pretty entertaining, I'm not going to lie, especially since it doesn't flush at the moment. But yes, no, it's absolutely true. It's not working right now because it doesn't have water to be able to flush anything down. Just pour some water in the back. You should be able to flush it.
In the back? Like, take the back off the toilet?
Take the top off the back, put some water in there, and then you should be able to flush
it. And my toilet's going to flush. I'll tell you this. I'm definitely going to try that first thing when I get home. And I'm definitely going to call you and tell you that you're a moron. Or I'm going to tell you you're a genius. We'll see. That's Julio Sanchez.
Genius.
I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. Okay, you made a genius move by hiring Les Miles earlier this week. I'm a little bit surprised that Les Miles was willing to take the job. A few years ago, it made sense. But a few years ago, he was a few years younger. You're talking about a guy, Les Miles, that's now in his 60s, that signed a 5-year contract at $2.8 million per season. This is the craziest stat ever. KU basketball has only had 4 head coaches since 1964. I know it sounds wrong, but it's right. KU basketball has only had four head coaches since 1964. Let's see if I can do this off the top of my head. 64 to 83, Ted Owens. 83 to 88, Larry Brown. 89 to 03, Roy Williams. And since then, Bill Self. Not a lot of turnover. Must be a pretty good job. Four head coaches since 1964. KU football just hired their fifth head coach since Mark Mangino. Try that one on for size. Turner Gill, Charlie Weiss, Charlie Rice, Clint Bowen, who was only there for a cup of coffee, David Beatty, and now Les Miles. And after firing Mark Mangino, KU tried to do it a completely different way. Mark Mangino was a great football coach, a great football coach. He won the Orange Bowl at Kansas. Again, he won the Orange Bowl at Kansas. But the guy was 400-plus pounds, and he was a jerk. If he wasn't either one of those things, he was a good enough coach, where instead of firing him, I've always been of the opinion they should have given him a lifetime contract, free buffets in Lawrence, and built him a statue on Mass Street. But instead, they fired him, a guy who won the Orange Bowl at Kansas. And so the next guy, they wanted him to be a better-looking guy and not so much of a jerk. So they went out there and they hired Turner Gill. He was better looking. He wasn't as much of a jerk. He didn't win any football games. So then they fired him. And they were like, yeah, you know what? That kind of overweight jerk wasn't too bad. Are there any of those guys out there? Like maybe that have experience? Oh, Charlie Weiss? You don't say. He's willing to come? Yeah. How'd that work out? And then you tried it again with David Beatty, completely switching gears again. We went back to a younger guy with less experience, with more energy. So you've tried it all, man. You tried Mangino, fired him. You tried Gill, fired him, tried Weiss, fired him, tried Beatty. And now you're kind of trying a combination of all of these different guys with Les Miles. But if Les Miles thinks that because he's Les Miles, he's going to be able to recruit to Kansas, bro, you're crazy. Still got to deal with Oklahoma and Texas and to the north, Colorado and Oklahoma State. And Texas A&M, the Midwest, this general area, not good for recruiting unless you're in Oklahoma or Texas. The reason that KU won the Orange Bowl in 2008 with Mark Mangino was with a bunch of guys that were a day late and a dollar short. Nobody wanted Todd Reesing. You guys know where Todd Reesing's from? Austin, Texas. Grew up 5 minutes from the Longhorn Stadium. Texas didn't want him. The running back, it was some white running back out of Salina, Kansas named Jake Sharp. Nobody wanted that guy. Or Brandon McAnderson, some dude that went to Lawrence High School. Or Kerry Meyer or Desmond Briscoe, even Aqib Talib and Chris Harris. Those guys were 1- and 2-star recruits, respectively. So at KU, when it comes to basketball, you don't have to do anything. It's already been done. The best recruits come to you. In the case of football, the best recruits are never going to come to you. They never have, and they never will. So you have to develop the same way that Mark Mangino was able to. Because at a blue-chip, blue-blood basketball school like Kansas, all you have to do is not be the worst. Kentucky football, Indiana football, Duke football, North Carolina football. You just have to be okay. You just have to be aight. Go out there every year, win 4 or 5 games. Every other year, go to an Aloha Bowl. Appease your fan base and your boosters, and you'll keep your job. David Cutcliffe, the Duke head coach, he's been their head coach for like 15 years. But what has Duke football ever really done? Nothing. Fortunately for him, it's a basketball school. The problem with KU is since Mark Mangino's been gone, they haven't been okay. They haven't been aight. They've been the worst Division I football program of all the Power 5 schools. They won, what, 12 games a year they won the Orange Bowl? Heading into this season, they'd only won 12 games combined since winning the Orange Bowl. So to me, Les Miles is a great hire. Came up with $2.8 million per year to pay him. But it doesn't really change my expectations as a KU fan. If this guy can go out there and win 5 games next year, 6 games a year after that, and then as long as he's there, just keep winning 5, 6, or 7 games, cool. I'm good with that. And the vice versa is true also. If you think about the blue blood football programs, Alabama, Notre Dame, USC, Georgia, Auburn, what if your basketball team's ever done? It's very difficult to be elite in both sports. As a matter of fact, only a few teams have ever turned that trick. Florida, Tim Tebow and Joakim Noah, Ohio State for a couple of seasons, Louisville. But there's not really a school out there right now in 2018 that you would call elite at both basketball and football. KU doesn't have to be elite. Just don't be the worst. And you shouldn't be with Les Miles as your head coach. Coming up next, I turn into Professor Levine and I give out pre-buy Chiefs grades coming up right here on 610 Sports Radio. And a happy Thanksgiving to you and yours. Welcome back in 610 Sports Radio and all over the world on the radio.com app. That good-looking chap across from me, that's Julio Sanchez. I'm the sports machine, Sean Levine. For those of you that are gathering around the table, getting ready to eat the turkey and the stuffing and the mashed potatoes and gravy and the cranberries and pumpkin pie. I'm leaving, Julio. I'm hungry. You can do the last hour and a half on your own. Thank you, sir. Feel free to hit us up on the text line at 69306. Julio will get us an update on the NFL happenings coming up in just a few minutes at the top of the 2 o'clock hour. I'm about to give out some Chiefs grades, but first a quick thought on the red and gold and why they need to cash in right now. People seem to get pissed off in Kansas City when you talk about this type of thing. Like, hold your horses, man. The window's not closing. Okay, true. It's the beginning of the Patrick Mahomes era, which coincides with the end of the Andy Reid era. Andy is 61, maybe he turns 62 in season. So you're talking about, what, maybe another 3 or 4 years on the sidelines as the Chiefs head coach? In theory, Patrick Mahomes will be your quarterback for those next 3 or 4 years. Therefore, you should continuously have a shot to get to and win Super Bowls, but it just doesn't work that way. Everybody always tries to use the same example. Dan Marino got there in his second season and never got back. If you maybe set an over-under for Super Bowl championships in the career of Patrick Mahomes, I would set that number at 1.5. So the question is he going to win one, or is he going to win multiple? It's not a foregone conclusion that he's going to win a Lombardi trophy. There have been a lot of quarterbacks that have come along and played this game that retired without ever winning the ultimate prize. I just think the scenario that he's in, Andy Reid is his head coach, the best offensive weapons any first full-year quarterback's ever been surrounded by, combined with the fact that the incumbents are done. 3 years from now, Tom Brady's going to be retired. Phillip Rivers is going to be retired. Drew Brees is going to be retired. All the great quarterback, Peyton Manning retired a couple of seasons ago, so the timing is right, which is why I would set his Super Bowl total number at 1.5. But this still might be the best shot, and that's a tough pill to swallow, considering that it's the first full year of Patrick Mahomes as your quarterback. But everything is right in front of this team where they want it to be. Because next year, it's not going to be all sunshine and daffodils. Next year is when Patrick Mahomes becomes eligible to rip up his rookie contract and to get a new one. Don't you think his agent is also aware of that? Most of the time, when a wide receiver is heading into his fourth season or the final year of his rookie contract, if he's a frontline wide receiver, he either vocally says that he wants more money or he actually sits out until he gets more money. It's a position that's not known for not being a diva. And in the case of Tyreek Hill, yes, he had his issues before getting to Kansas City. He's been a choir boy since. I don't know if that's going to be the case next year. And I'm not suggesting he's going to be loud and abrasive and get himself in trouble. Hell, if I were Tyreek Hill, I would have my agent go to the bargaining table next year and say it's time to renegotiate. So even though you've got all these guys under contract for the foreseeable future and your head coach, Andy Reid, it's not going to be as smooth sailing as it has been in 2018, where you've beat a bunch of future Hall of Fame quarterbacks on the road, where you've got the guy that's most likely going to win NFL MVP, where the concerns heading into the season haven't really been there. Remember heading into the season before it started? We were talking about two units that might end up eventually costing this team. The secondary and the offensive line. Well, the secondary concerns still ring true. But when it comes to the offensive line, I haven't heard one person one time this entire year say the offensive line is what's going to cost the Chiefs. There's a reason why Patrick Mahomes has been as good as he has, because he's had plenty of time. There's a reason why Kareem Hunt has had an awesome sophomore season, because the line has created holes. So to me, that's no longer a concern. But when you talk about all these great things, that you've played a tough schedule that's got you tested, that you've got a guy that's played better at a quarterback position than anybody else, probably going to win MVP, your running back is elite, you've got a head coach that's been there. What's he been to? 5 NFC Championship games and 1 Super Bowl. You look at the schedule the rest of the way, you go, oh, you got Oakland twice and Seattle, only one more team with a winning record. There's no reason the Chiefs can't win out and finish this season 14-2. I would say at worst, they go 4-1 and finish 13-3, which still might get you the number one overall seed. But at that point, or even right now, we just have to stop this feeling sorrow for ourselves. We have to stop this conversation of, yeah, but we always lose these games in the playoffs. We've never had the quarterback. Just stop. Just shut up. That's not the case. You've got the quarterback. You've got the coach. You've got the record. Now go out there and do it. Because next year, contracts are going to come up. Injuries are going to happen. Lots of things can come up in the offseason. But right now, it's as smooth as sailing and the best opportunity for this team to get to and win a Super Bowl in my lifetime, and it's not even close. So you got to cash in. Andy Reid is absolutely a quarterback guru, and what he's done with Patrick Mahomes is combined all the quarterbacks that he's ever had into this great Frankenstein. Mike Vick, what was he? Great out the pocket. Well, Patrick Mahomes is actually even better at throwing the ball on the run than Mike Vick. Alex Smith, what was he? Real smart, really good at going through his progressions. That's the thing that impresses me the most about Patrick Mahomes is his mental makeup. Donovan McNabb, right? A guy that liked to protect the football, could get outside the pocket. I understand that Pat's been throwing more interceptions this last month than he did the first 8 games of the season, but if you really look those over with a fine-tooth comb, half of them came in either throwaway, end-of-the-half type scenarios, or the type of pass where the second that it left his hand, he realizes that he shouldn't have thrown it. So the mental makeup of Patrick Mahomes, to me, has been maybe even more impressive than the right arm. I was supposed to turn to Professor Levine to give out grades, but I didn't. So we'll do that in the final hour of the show. I'm going to let you know Patrick Mahomes is probably going to get an A+, just so you're ready. 4 hours in the book, 1 more to go right here on 610 Sports Radio. Should be.